Blog Talk Radio.
Family and friends, here's breaking news, March 5th, 2018.
Breaking news number one. Canadian Air Force just needs more practice by Colleen Keprov and Howard Cohen. They thought it was a bomb. Turns out the Canadian Air just needs more practice. Emergency crews responded to a call that something fell through the roof. Miami-Dade police confirmed that a raft that fell from a Canadian military helicopter on a training mission in Miami went through the roof. Lucy Rameau was lying in bed and talking to a friend on her cell phone when she heard what she thought was a bomb. Then she was covered in wood and dust from her roof. I kept screaming, she said. What happened? What happened? I was shocked. Turns out what sounded like a bomb was actually an 80-pound inflatable raft crashing through the roof of her home in the 14,000 block of Northeast 10th Court. See more in newsletter January-June 2018.
Breaking news number two. An Air Force One deal is near, by Russ Niles. President Donald Trump has again intervened in the negotiations with Boeing to modify two new 747-8 airliners to serve as the primary Air Force One aircraft and the backup. But it remains to be seen if the president's promise of $1 billion in savings will be realized. Defense One reported Trump met with Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg at the White House last Tuesday to try to break an impasse between the Air Force, which normally buys its own airplanes, and Boeing. The Air Force wants a fixed-price deal, meaning Boeing would eat any overruns, but Boeing is less keen on the idea. The Air Force already has the aircraft. It bought two 747-8 that were supposed to go to a Russian airline, but that Russian airline went bankrupt. So the negotiations are about the many modifications required. You can see more in newsletters January to June 2018.
Breaking news number three. Martin Baker fines for a ejection seat failure. That's by Russ Niles. UK-based ejection seat manufacturer Martin Baker has been fined $1.4 million by a British court after admitting its role in the death of a Royal Air Force Red Arrow demonstration team member who accidentally ejected from a team aircraft on the ground. Flight Lieutenant Sean Cunningham died in a local hospital near RAF Scampton, Lincolnshire on November 8, 2011, when the parachute on his Model 10B seat failed to deploy after he was shot 200 feet in the air from a stationary aircraft. The chute was misrigged, and the company admitted it failed to warn the Air Force of possible failure. Quote, this tragic accident was a result of an inadvertent ejection and main parachute deployment, a failure to over-tighten the drogue shackle boat, unquote. The company said this in a statement last November. It concealed it. quote, failed to provide a written warning to the RAF not to over-tighten the drog shackle boat. It was charged under the United Kingdom's health and safety laws. You can read more about this January to June 2018. Over to you, Chuck.
Breaking news number four. The first ultra-long-range Airbus 350XWB makes its debut. This is by Aviation Tribune. The first ultra-long-range version of the A350XWB has rolled out of the Airbus final assembly plant in Toulouse. The latest variants of the best-selling A350XWB family will be able to fly farther than any other commercial airliner and will enter service with a launch operator, Singapore Airlines, later this year. Together, Singapore Airlines has ordered seven A350-900 ultra-long-range aircraft, which has been used on nonstop flights between Singapore and the U.S., including the world's longest commercial service between Singapore and New York. Following the completion of the airframe assembly, the first aircraft has now moved to an outdoor station where it will undergo extensive ground tests prior to installation of its Rolls-Royce Trent XWB engine. See more newsletters, June
2018. Hello, Eastern family. Great having you with us. My name is Jim Hart. Along with our other hosts, we want to welcome and to thank you for listening and calling into the show. You have made us the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. We would love to hear your comments and share your memories with radio listeners from around the world. I guess you may remember that we're heard in over 48 countries around the world. If you haven't called the show, all you have to do is call 213-816-1611 and just say hi, or hola, or buenos dias, como esta, bonjour, and talk with us on the air live. We can identify many countries in our Blog Talk Radio application. Isn't it great that we can keep the Eastern legacy going out not only to Eastern family, but to listeners from many different countries? That's what we try to do every week on the EAL radio show. Won't you join us by adding your voice to those broadcasts? Our thanks also to those who choose to listen by computer using the radio icon on our homepage at www.ealradioshow.com, or perhaps by signing in at the site of a provider, Blog Talk Radio, at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. Should you too wish to talk on our live broadcast, please feel free to use our call-in number, 213-816-1611, at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Let me repeat the number so you can write it down for your Monday night visits. 213-816-1611. Our lines are always open for calls, and if you choose not to participate and talk live with our hosts, we ask you to please mute your phone, as our producer board does not have the capability of filtering out background noises. Now, Neil, let's get this flight number 355 in the air. How about a good takeoff?
the second. Feel each minute. As the day goes by, feel yourself in it. It's a good day to up and fly away. It's so easy to do. Easton's got the right time.
Hello, folks. Half aircraft will haul my stuff free. Well, that's one way of looking at it, and at least that's the way I looked at it on more than one occasion. I thought that if I had taken advantage of my own airline, others may have done so also. Surfing Facebook on the internet a few months ago, I saw a National Airlines flight attendant post the very same thought. The stuff crew members brought home from a working trip. Thus the title, Look What I Brought Home. And I added, or, honey, look what I brought home from my trip. Remember I said on more than one occasion, well, I'll start the show by telling you I brought a redwood tree to my home in Georgia. More about that later on, though. You think that was an unusual delivery? Now, let's tell you about others, what others said they brought home. Most of these were national flight attendants. We had a few Eastern also that contributed, and crew members, not just flight attendants, a couple of pilots. And you're going to especially like what one pilot said. All these are airline crews, pilot and flight attendants. Chuck is our narrator tonight.
Jim Holder, how about adding a few more and perhaps one of your own favorites.
Last week, but not about a crew member. It was a passenger trying to bring a peacock on board the airplane. United Airlines denied the woman's effort to bring a peacock onto a flight. I know this is true, and I saw it on TV. Departing from the Newark Liberty International Airport. Live and Let Fly reported early this week that even though the unidentified woman claimed she had a second ticket, for the peacock, the airline denied a request. A spokesperson for United further tells Fox News that the travelers with the peacock were told they would not be able to bring it on board. Quote, this animal did not meet guidelines for a number of reasons, including its weight and size, end quote, a United spokesman told Fox News. We explained this to the customer on three separate occasions before they arrived at the airport. The airline also said it requires passengers to provide documentation from a medical professional and at least 48 hours advance notice before bringing an emotional support animal like a dog onto a flight.
Thanks, Jim. Now let's see if the crew members had stranger items than a peacock. Jim, perhaps you allow unusual articles in the cockpit as cargo?
Well, yeah, I've had a Persian cat on my lap one night, and I had a cat in a kennel in the cockpit from Atlanta to New Orleans the night before. I won't reveal the name, but a check airman in Atlanta called me up and said that his relatives had visited, and the cat got loose, and they had to go back to New Orleans, but the cat showed up a couple of weeks later, and he said, if you have a strange cage in your cockpit when you get on the airplane in the morning, I hope you'll take it with you. And I did, and there was a cat. And when I landed in New Orleans, somebody came up, reached down, got the cat, and left. And didn't even thank me for bringing it down. But one more that I will tell you about long time ago when Freebird Pursuit was a rage. I had a layover in Canada. It was either Toronto or Montreal, I don't recall. First day of a three-day trip, we went up there, and for some dumb reason, I bought the entire Trivia Pursuit set. And it's about five boxes, and each one of them weighs about 20 pounds, I think. It seemed like 50 by the time I got home. But I drug all of that stuff all over the United States for 3 days, and I swore I'd never do that anything stupid like that again. And matter of fact, I ended up giving it to my son. And didn't ever even play them.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun you had. Linda, how about giving us some emails that we had on this subject in the past few weeks?
Okay, Chuck, thank you. We heard from the following people. They're mostly flight attendants that sent these emails to us. The first one is, Kathy, dear flight attendant Kathy, please forgive me. I don't know how to correctly pronounce your beautiful name, but I'll say Kathy Renoni Bussell. She brought a marble chess set from Tijuana and, of course, cases of Coors. And, of course, they were wrapped in that familiar brown paper. Susan Nefford, she went picking, and got 10 or 12 flats of strawberries on a layover in Richmond. Nancy McDonald Siegel, she got a 12-string guitar from Tijuana. And there's that Coors beer from San Francisco, or she said it was a little town that was just over the bridge. She can't remember the name of that little town, but they all went there, and they found a wooden, she found a wooden magazine rack. She still has it in her home, and a chess set. Now, Bonnie Greasy, forgive me on the name, Bonnie, Japanese bayonet from World War II, no kidding. Susan Kendall Mayer, she got Dungeness crabs from San Francisco.
Didn't we all?
Yeah, really. Tom Sage, he said Miami-based National Cruise brought back that Coors from California. He said, we thought it was so great because we couldn't get it in Florida. Now, what I got is not anything exotic, but I was in New York City, and I saw this a framed oil painting. It was a picture of a clown, and I had no idea of who I was going to marry, nothing approaching serious romance or anything, but I thought I got to have that picture because I want to put it in the child's room someday. So that's me. So now that's about me.
Well, thanks a lot, Linda. Perhaps Eston is around and he can add to the unusual list.
He sure is. And I forgot about the cuckoo clocks, but he even remembers the town in Germany. He can take it from here.
Yeah, during 1985 and 86, Eastern had an A300 training program operating in Frankfurt, Germany, and we were using the Lufthansa's simulator. We had so much extra crew training at that time. We were getting ready for the Moonlight Specials, which we flew with the A300s at night. And anyway, I was there 2 years, 3 weeks on, 3 weeks off, and as the director of the program in flight training. And I had a company car. And so every weekend I'd go around looking, a lot of scenery and everything. Anyway, I stumbled across this little town called Furtwangen, and it's where they make all the cuckoo clocks. And I probably at various times shipped, well, I brought them back with me to the States and gave them to friends and wedding gifts, what have you. Ended up, I didn't get one for myself. I still wish I had a. That's one story, but I got three or four others down the road.
Okay, we want to hear about them.
Okay, yeah, here we go another. And I had a layover one night in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. And you wonder, you didn't know Eastern flew over there. Well, they didn't really, but during the first Gulf War, Eastern committed one DC-10 to the CRAF program. That's the Civilian Reserve Air Force. And each airline gave them an airplane. They didn't have enough military lift to get all the troops over there that they wanted at the time. So anyway, we picked the troops up in, well, two different places on various trips, either Shaw Air Force in South Carolina or Pope Air Force Base in North Carolina. 82nd Airborne is there. But anyway, this one night we laid over. Usually we didn't lay over. We'd go into Dalrain and then ferry the airplane right back to Rome. But anyway, this one night we laid over in Abu Dhabi. And one of the flight attendants said, "Captain, how about going downtown with me? I don't want to go by myself. It's, you know, an Arab country and a woman unescorted. That's not kosher." So I went with her, and I'll throw this in. She was married to one of our senior captains. Anyway, she bought $5,000 or more of gold, various necklaces and rings and what have you, and brought it back home with her. That's one story. And we still have time for another one?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go right ahead.
Okay, and I worked in the training department the last 10 years with the airline, more or less. And the months that I flew the line, which was every third month, we'd go out and fly the line. So I usually flew the I was training on training pilots on the A300 and the DC-10. But I remember a layover in Buenos Aires, DC-10 trip, and you could buy all kind of copper products there, skillets, solid copper now. And I bought several of those at various times and brought them back. And also you could buy many other things. And then also I had layovers in Santiago, Chile, again on the DC-10. And I remember going and getting measured for a suit. And they had tailors there that would make you a custom suit. It was very cheap, about half what it would be in the States. And so I bought a sport coat and a suit. I still got them, in fact.
Okay.
Also, I got a lot of copper products, like, it's about 3 foot by 6 foot map of the world in copper.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then I got a big map of South America in copper. And I got quite a set of Eastern Wings in copper with my name on bottom. So
that's great.
Got other stories, but that's enough for now, okay?
Yeah, we can get back to you in a little bit. Dorothy, we have more emails. Can you tell us something about them?
Yes, Chuck. We did have a few. The Continental crews from California who had a layover in Miami took vegetables home because they thought they were better from Florida. I wonder what it means when one airline's people take beer and the other group alike elf food. What does that say? Sharon Deanne Davis, group admin, she brought a living room rug from New Delhi as well as, like Esten just said, a copper-clad planter basket. I guess they were very favorite things to bring back. She brought a huge Kenya bag from Nairobi, a karaoke machine from Tokyo before they were available in the United States. She also brought back an antique silk kimono from Tokyo, leather jackets for a family of five from Tijuana. And then she was on a flight where a dear friend brought back from London a beautiful Irish harp. That must have been gorgeous. Mm. Lynn Dash said she brought milk can from Chile, while Bonnie Parrish wrote coffee table from Mexico, and she put it in first class. Cassandra Guru, drapes from the New York Lower East Side. I bet you they were beautiful from the East Side. Janet Burdick, she brought a canary she found at Coyot Tower in San Francisco. It was tame, and she brought it to a pet shop and got a travel cage. She had it in the DC-8 lounge on the flight. When she was making the departing announcement, it started chirping, and it was heard throughout the plane. I wonder how she got away with that. Janet Burdick also said she always brought home sourdough bread purchased at San Francisco every single trip.
We all did that.
Thanks, Dorothy. Hey, Jim Hart, we have more we've heard from. How about continuing on with our list?
Okay, fine. Sandy Smith says, my captain dad brought home a kitten, and we named him Jet. Beverly Shaw Luther, my dad, Captain Jim Shaw, always bought me sourdough bread, muffins, and for him, of course, a case of Coors. Christine Topovich, inlaid wooden chest from Karachi. Nancy Drummond had a brass bed from Seoul. We got two because they were so cheap, but had to ship them anyway. Mary Bacon, Coors beer from California. Fake Tiffany shade for a pool table. Try fitting that legally behind the last row on a DC-10. Several other fake Tiffany shades as gifts. 20 pounds of coffee at one time from Costa Rica. No drugs inside, of course. And then a poppy. Nancy Drummond brought home a TV at Christmas in Los Angeles from my parents, and that went into the cockpit, as did a snake on another trip with Cheryl Irby, lucky pilots that had to strap all their crap in the coat closet. Oh, we have so many more of them. Can I continue?
Dorothy's going to continue on here. Keith?
Okay, fine.
Keith Nelson had a heavy-duty wheelie for Coors in bottles from San Francisco and LAX. Hands were too easy. Also, cases of Polar beer from Caracas, wicker furniture and milk cans from Buenos Aires. Hetty Mendez wrote and said she dragged tons of Coors from Cali, Polar from Caracas, and Concha wine from Santiago, Chile. That's why our right arms are now permanently longer than our left. Andy Mendez, she wrote, when a Coors exploded in the first class closet on a flight from Los Angeles to Miami, a passenger said that her coat appeared to smell like beer for some reason.
Yeah.
She explained that her coat was next to another coat that must have been sprayed with a new cologne called Real Beer. It worked for her.
That's a good one.
Sue Ellen Hollihan, she said she remembers stopping at the Boys Market on the way to the airport from the Huntley House and buying groceries to bring home. Mary Bacon, she remembers taking empty wine bottles to that restaurant in Caracas to fill with that garlic dressing. Would never get past security these days, she says. She also said Hetty Mendez, I'm sure people had funnier shenanigans, but Miami-based may have had the market cornered on crazy but fun. Linda Anguilera, abalone shells from San Diego. Ann Price, she wrote and said, so she and Tony Malalevsky, she had gorgeous long hair down to her waist, and she was an Italian gal. They went to Tijuana on their San Diego layover. They bought so much stuff, there was no way they could get it back on the bus, and they were drunk as crap on tequila. Can you imagine? Lynn Dash, she brought designer luggage from Zona Rose, Mexico. And Barbara Cole Seleski, she went horseback riding in Topanga Canyon outside of L.A. Sue Ellen Simmons, Cunningham Shuckler Simmons, she has quite a long name. She had a lot of marriages. She saw an oak tree that had just been cut down, and we decided that the large logs would be a great base for end tables. But how to get them back to Miami, that was the key. Nancy Gordon, she had a steel drum coming out of Montserrat on vacation. First class closet on a DC-10. Can you imagine this? Back to you, Chuck.
Well, Neil, you have a couple that you're guilty of. Want to tell us about them?
Not really. But I will.
But I will. You know, I've
already gone.
Yeah, I've mentioned this a few times on the radio show over 8 years. I'm sure some of you have heard this before, but I did have a layover in San Francisco with a long layover, and I rented a car. And usually I would ask the crew, hey, you guys want to chip in and we rent a car and go somewhere? Well, I think there was somebody with me besides myself. But we drove up to the Redwood Forest, and underneath one of the tallest trees in the world, I saw a redwood tree that I dug up and brought home with me back to Atlanta. And, of course, it was a seedling about 10 inches tall, but had pretty good roots. I planted it after I got it home. I planted it in my front yard in an island covered with pine needles and lots of shade. Now, that was in Marietta, as we say in Georgia lingo, Marietta for Marietta, where I was living. But the little yellow fellow remained healthy looking for about 2 years after I planted it and hadn't grown 1/32nd of an inch, I don't believe. Then it was no more. For one day I was mowing the yard near where I had planted the young redwood, and you guessed it, I cut it down with a lawnmower. I bet that's one of the few redwood trees ever grown in Georgia, and it was chopped down by the blades of my lawnmower. So that's one of my stories. I'm going to default to back to the narrator, and I have another one if we have time. We'll talk about that. But go ahead, Chuck, and let's do some more. These are fun.
Okay. Now, Linda Fuller, I know it was long since your flying days. Heck, it was long ago for all of us. But do you have any unusual stuff that you can't leave without?
Well, I got to go to Frankfurt, Germany with Aston over there. And, of course, being a lady interested in their clothing, I found garments that were, they had a Bavarian fashion look. And he let me buy some clothing over there. And I mean, they were different from American outfits, and I remember I had one of those outfits on when we were deadheading one day, and the flight attendant complimented me, and I thought that was a big deal because they don't have time to talk personal talk. I mean, I thought they've seen everything. They work with the public and all that, and for her to compliment my outfit really boosted me. By the way, Essen still wears the things that he bought overseas.
Tell him about Linda, can you say something I see here about Keith?
About Keith, let me think. About Keith?
Keith Nelson.
Keith Nelson.
Keith Nelson said he remembers the 727 trip to St. Thomas, and a passenger came up and asked a flight attendant about sitting in the back of the airplane. And the passenger said, I heard that the tail was the safest place to sit. Without blinking an eye, the flight attendant told him, of course the tail is the safest place to sit. You never hear of an airplane backing into a mountain, do you? He said, thanks. He said, thanks for the fun times and the great memories. Anita Hudson, she said, I also went to Tijuana, and I dragged huge flower pots and onyx chest sets, plural, and lamps, plural, up the stairs of the airplane. The thrill of having something from another country was exhilarating. She said, to this day, I love bringing things home from my layover. So she's still flying. Debbie Freeman Shannon, she liked meeting an English rocker from Liverpool. She remembers where that guy was sitting. He was in 8C on a 727. He purposely spilled a Bloody Mary in his lap so that she would have to come and mop it up. So she says that she didn't mind it because she says it was so cute. We had a wonderful romance. So that's a continuing story there. Evelyn Rose. During the flight, she went up to check on the guys, and they were saying, what's that smell? And the other one said, I don't know. And the captain said, well, we'll put it in the maintenance book, and they can find out what it is. So when we landed, they put the suitcases in the jetway, and maintenance came on to check the smell, and they couldn't find a thing. She got her bag and laughed all the way through the jetway.
Pretty good.
Bad.
Hey, Don, I think you got more to talk about.
Yeah, I got one, and I think we've already talked about the second one, but I got one here from Evelyn Rose. She says, I remember being on a layover in New York City, and I decided to bring my husband some good New York bagels. So I bought an assortment, onion, garlic, everything plain, etc. Before pickup, when packing my bag, I was able to fit the bagels in my suitcase and eliminate carrying another bag. I got to the plane and stuck my suitcase in the cockpit. Folks, I think we already talked about Barbara Selewski.
There's a little bit more there.
Right.
Yeah, there's a little bit more.
Okay, well, she writes and says, went horseback riding in Tropicana Canyon outside L.A. Sue Ellen Simmons Cunningham Sheckler Simmons saw an oak tree that had just been cut down, and we decided that the large logs would be a great base for end tables. But how are we going to get them back to Miami? Well, we came back from riding and went to the luggage store at the old Santa Monica Mall. Turns out that there was the first wheelies that had just been delivered. You know, the ones that had the single bar in the middle and the bungee cord straps. Well, thought perfect. Next trip, we got horseback riding again and found that that the cut-up oak tree was still there. We finished our ride and asked the stable hand if he'd give us a ride back up where the tree was so we could get our logs. He says, sure, no problem. We take a cab back to the Huntley house, run up to our room, get our new wheelies, load up our logs. To this day, I still can't believe that we went to so much trouble to get these logs back to Miami when all we had one could do was found the same thing down here if we had just gone and driven out to the Redlands. But it really, I do believe it was just the adventure and the idea to have a stump end tables from California.
Well, we were just about finished here. I thought maybe, Neil, you could finish out our fun time for the night with Merle.
Yeah, and also I want to add another one of my own. I must confess, this flight attendant, Marie Bacon, she sent us a lot of email items. She says, I must confess to my naivete again, 1978 now, I had just bought a house and saw these wonderful mini, what I thought, were different versions of palm trees in New York City. I got a small one in a container to take home, not wanting it squished. I hand-carried it the whole way home. We had no security then, and no one said anything about my cute little plant, not even in the crew bus ride to the airport. I got home and put it in a prettier pot and on the windowsill, and one day my husband was standing there and asked, what is that doing there growing on our windowsill? I told him the story, and he told me it was a pot plant, and I don't have a green thumb, but it was doing quite well. He told me to throw it out, so I went and dumped it in the field behind our house that would never be developed because it sat along C-14 canal down there. I bet that crop has provided the subsequent owners with a lot of explaining to do, and of course, we all know what that palm New York City palm tree was.
That's hysterical.
Well, we got one email for the last here, and I thought Don might want to take that one.
This one's from Scott Smith. And it's a very quick one. It says, brought home two wives. Different layovers. Different years, of course. That's it.
Boy.
Hey, Neil.
Let's find the captain.
Okay. Yeah. And, of course, I think probably some of you guys out there listening have got all sorts. Our board is lit up tonight. And maybe some national folks might want to say what they think about dipping into their email. But it was sent to me. But I brought coins back from Los Angeles back in, I believe it was 1972 or 3. And I brought back books from Toronto. And now the one I want to tell you about is I brought back a towel from Mexico City. I've told this on the radio show a time or two also. And it's embarrassing. But I had a great layover in Mexico City at the Maria Isabel Hotel. You guys recall that, Jim Holder? The Maria Isabel?
Yeah. Lovely hotel.
Wow. What a hotel. I mean, it was a 10-star hotel if they got that high in stars. But at any rate, I fell in love with the towel, the bathroom towel, T-O-W-E-L. And I just fell in love with it because it was more of a sheet, but it was so soft and the best of fabric. You know, it was white, of course, and I guess you could use it as a robe or a blanket if you wanted to, I guess. But and it had Maria Isabel at the bottom, both bottoms of the towel. And I just put it aside so I wouldn't use it because I knew where it was going. It was going to my house in Atlanta, Georgia. And so, sure enough, packing my suitcase for the trip back to Atlanta the next morning, I find room in my suitcase to stuff that towel. So now we fly back, and I'm the captain on the flight, and the 727, of course, and we stop, first stop from Mexico City, New Orleans, where we go through custom. We've never, as a flight crew, been subjected to customs interfering with our luggage. Never happened. Well, this particular day it did. And guess who was first in line of the crew members? It was me. And, of course, the guy wanted to see what was in my suitcase. Now, here was my first and second officer and all four or five flight attendants behind them all lined up. And I open my suitcase. And we all looked down at Maria Isabel. And there was that beautiful towel. And, of course, nothing was said. I turned several shades of red, I guess. And no one asked me where I got it. Or they knew where I got it, but they didn't know why I was in my suitcase. And I didn't say anything, of course. But and the guy who was inspecting my luggage didn't say anything. But I was the only guy that was checked out of the entire crew.
Yeah.
And that was my bring back of that hotel. And I don't know whatever happened to that. But anyhow,
I bet you looked really cool flying that airplane back with that towel. Kind of like a yoga toga.
No, well, I wouldn't take it out of my suitcase. I had one of those Samsonite hard luggage. You remember the TV commercial where Samsonite was advertising with the gorilla in the cage, and he was taking Samsonite luggage, and he was throwing it all over the cage. And it would never break.
I had a blind
break date
with a gal once. It looked like she was inside that suitcase.
Oh, me. Well, now, Jim Holder, does that remind you of any?
Neil, George sent in something. He couldn't be with us tonight, but he wanted to make this remark, and he said, the absolute best thing to bring home would be for a pilot to bring home a cute young stewardess and say, hi, honey, look what I brought home.
Yeah,
that'd really go.
Yeah.
We do have area code 519 on tonight. Is that George?
No, it's Renee.
Renee, up in Canada. Did you have did you ever fly on a flight and bring some special stuff home with you?
Well, I did have a trip one time from Toronto. We had a bunch of travel agents working in South America. We flew to Cali, Colombia, through Miami, and some of the luggage was missing. So we went down to the hotel, we checked in, and a long story about the restaurant, that's another whole story there. Anyhow, we had lots of time, so I told one of the girls, I said, hey, give me your baggage tag. I'll go to the airport while we're waiting for dinner, and I'll pick up your bag. It was a Samsonite. You just talked about big red Samsonites. Anyhow, I said, is the bag locked or not? She said, it's not locked. So I said, okay, good, I'll run out and come back, and by the time dinner's finished, I'll have your bag. So I go to the airport, and there was a crew, Eastern crew, coming in for the connection in Cali. I had to follow them to get through the crowd that was at the terminal for the inbound flight. I get into customs, and I see the red bag. I go over, and I go to open it up, and it's locked. It had a key. So I go to the Eastern agent, and I said, hey, you got any Samsonite keys that I can use? She said, okay. So she brings over the keys. I open the bag. I have the baggage claim form. I go to the counter, and the customs guy looks at me, red bag. He says, he makes a motion, open it up. I'm not a Spanish-speaking person, so I open it up. And what's in there, it's all ladies' clothing. He thinks I'm coming in on a flight. He goes through everything in this bag to see if there's anything that belongs to a male. And there's nothing there. He looks at me, he shakes his head, close the bag, and like, get out of here. So, story. That was pretty funny. Then I get downtown, I tell the girl, I said, thanks a lot. I said, your bag was locked, and it was pretty embarrassing.
Lucky you didn't ask to come on.
Yeah, I was lucky, but that was a good one.
You know, it's so funny about Coors Beer, because I think every crew that flew west of the Mississippi, wherever they stopped, they were going to buy Coors Beer and bring it home, wherever on the East Coast. And I certainly lugged across the country my share of Coors Beer. I guess I could have started a brewery almost with my own beer cans and dumping them in. But I do remember bringing back Coors Beer. And, you know, just listening to this email tonight that we've had about crew members bringing back Coors Beer, I was just thinking we ought to make a story out of this. Dorothy, our Pulitzer Prize winning webmaster, we ought to make a story out of this and send it to Coors Beer. If I were brewery, knowing how popular beer was, it was like Prohibition days on the East Coast for Coors, because
I've been to the brewery in Golden, Colorado. It's pretty nice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But
you
drive a truck across the Mississippi River.
It's called Golden, Colorado?
Golden, Colorado. It's right outside of Denver.
Jim Holden?
Yeah, I got a story. It's sort of halfway, but apply to bringing things back home. I was the captain on this flight, 727, New York out to Bermuda. And it was a short layover in Bermuda. This is a long time ago. You'll realize this is a long time ago. And they didn't have a jetaway. They had the stairs. And so we land, everybody gets off, and they start boarding to back up the airplane, and I hear some kind of commotion going on back there in the first class section, the agent and the flight attendant, and this two elderly couple, a man and a woman, dressed very nice. There was something going on. The flight attendant came and said, Captain, you need to come back here and look what's happening. And so I went back there, and what it was, this elderly couple had bought some very expensive glass of some sort. I don't know what it was. It was in a box, maybe twice as big as a Coors, a case of Coors. And they were being told by the agent that it had to go as cargo down in the bottom of the airplane. And they had bought a first-class ticket for that box. And the agent was just saying, you're not going to, I don't care how many first-class tickets that you bought, this is going downstairs. And so I went back there and I looked, and they looked at me, and they were very well dressed, very nice. Like I say, this is a long time ago. And I said, well, we're just going to strap it in its seat. It's got a first-class ticket. And the agent said, no, you're not. And he went storming down the stairs, and he went running in. About 5 minutes later, he came running back with a station manager, and they both came bang, 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 bang up the stairs. The station manager says, I'm such and such. I forgot his name. He said, what's going on here? And I said, well, these two first-class passengers, real nice. They bought this box of good crystal of something, and they bought a ticket for it because they didn't want it to be checked baggage to put, you know, might get broken. And he said, well, I'm the station manager, and I'm saying that's not going to happen. And I said, well, I'm the captain, and I'm saying it is going to happen. And he said, well, you're not in charge here. I'm the station manager, and he's getting on my nerves. And I said, listen, I'm going to get off this airplane because in 3 minutes it's going to New York, and you're going to get a free ride if you don't get your behind off this airplane. And he was stomping down there hollering back at me. I'm calling everybody. You know, he's going to jam my job and everything else. You know, we cranked up. We flew back. And, boy, those two people were very happy, I guarantee you. They really were.
Oh, yeah.
It was stupid. It was stupid to buy a first-class ticket. But, anyhow, when I got back to Atlanta, I went in and told Paul Kelly what had happened just in case. He laughed. He said, well, no. And I never heard another word about it. That station manager was – he thought he was hot stuff, I'll tell you. But he almost got a free trip to New York.
Yeah. Okay.
Neil, I got a quickie for you. In 1970, Avianca was celebrating its 50th anniversary. And they invited some of the salespeople from Miami to fly down to Bogota and celebrate their 50th anniversary. So I went down with some other people from our department, and while we were down in Bogota, we took a side tour, see some sights, and I'm going through this one area, and there was a beautiful, beautiful 12-string guitar. I've never seen one that beautiful. And I said, you know, how much is it in American? The guy says, $20.
Oh,
I said, geez. What? He said, $20. I said, gimme it. Well, I bought that guitar. However, no case. So when we got back to the airport the next day, I'm carrying this guitar. And I said, you know, I told the flight attendant, I said, you know, we have positive space passes, but I said, I'm going to have to carry this on. And she said, well, I don't know if it's going to be okay or not, blah, blah, blah. And it's, you know, 1970. And so finally the captain, when he was getting on the airplane, he saw the guitar. He said, can I look at that? And I said, sure. And he started playing it. I said, geez, that's a pretty good deal, you know. I said, well, I'm having a problem. I said, I don't want to check it. I said, because it's going to get broken. No, he says, give it to me. I'm going to put it in the cockpit.
Oh, wow.
So that was how I got my guitar back. I had it for a long time.
I have one, Neil. Yeah.
Okay, Dorothy,
hold
that just a second. I've got, I think we've got Al Jenkins. You're on the line. You're from Atlanta. And I think we talked about you think you've got something that you want to add to our show tonight?
Yes, I do. I was out in Salt Lake City, and a young lady says, hey, I got some guns. Do you want them? I said, sure. She brought me, I thought it was one or two. She brought me five guns. And I said, oh, Lord, how am I going to get them home? So that time, you know, you go down and load your own stuff. So I go down, load my guns up. Airplane lands in Atlanta. I go down there and pick them off the airplane and got on home with them.
Times are changing.
And no checks at all, Al?
No checks at all, and they were all antique guns.
Oh, wow. Do you still have them?
Yes, sir.
Well, you better hide them. You better hide them.
I don't think they're looking for handguns.
You know, at one time.
No, they weren't at that time.
At one time, here's a quick joke, and Jim Hart, Jim Holder, you've heard it many times. We had a captain, and I won't name his name, but he's one that we've talked about and done shows off of his writings in the past. But great guy, and a lot of folks made fun of him because he was a tall guy, but he talked with a very squeaky voice, and everybody called him the world's tallest teenager. Great guy, and he carried a gun in his flight bag, and he was on a flight up in New York, and one of the captains was deadheading on that flight, and they were talking about guns, and this captain says, "Oh, well, I got a gun. You want to see it?" And he pulled it out of his flight bag. Jim Holder, you know who I'm talking about now. I know.
Oh, yeah. The captain. Yeah. The other guy was Dennis Van Hesse.
Oh, Van Hesse, that's right. And he looked at it, and he says he gave it to the captain that was inquiring about the gun, and he looked at it, and he kind of sighted it, and he handed it back to the captain. And the captain said, "What do you think of that? What do you think of that gun, my gun?" And he says, "Well, it's a fine piece of work, but," he says, "I got one suggestion to make." And he said, "What? What can I improve it somehow?" He said, "Yeah, you need to file that front sight off the barrel." He said, "Why? Will it make it shoot better?" He said, "No, it won't hurt as bad when they shove it up your..." Well, anyhow, that's the end of the story.
When the hijacker shoves it up.
Yeah, shoves it up. That's the end of
the
story.
Famous Atlanta story.
Yeah, it is. It's gone around, and we had more captains imitating this particular captain, and he was loved by everybody, but and a great guy to fly with.
He was a great guy.
Yeah. All that knew him. Anyhow, what a fun trip. Dorothy, you had another one that you wanted to say. I remember you.
Yes. What I was going to say is I was a passenger aboard the aircraft coming back from the Caribbean. Actually, it was St. Martin. And when I was on the beach there, I found this beautiful, it looked like a coconut. And it was green. It was real fresh, green, bright, beautiful. It looked more like an acorn with a beautiful brown top. And so I wanted to take it home. I thought it was a great souvenir. So I put it in my case. And when we got to Logan Airport at 2 in the morning because the flight was delayed, we went through customs, and my boyfriend was in the back of me. He was in the back in line. So the officer says, "We have to go through the bags with spot checking them." I said, "Okay." So they open up my bag, and of course I have tissue paper that's in between every single article that I have in there so my clothes don't get wrinkled, and he's pulling all this stuff out, and he gets to the bottom, and here is this little tiny acorn looking coconut, and he said, "What is this?" And I said, "Well, it's a souvenir. I picked it up." "Well, you can't have this." I said, "Oh, okay, take it then if I can't have it." He said, "Oh no, you're coming with me." So before you know it, I got three or four different customs agents around me, and they said, "Well, who are you with?" And so I pointed to my boyfriend, and so they go over and they grab him and his suitcase, and now they put us in a little room. And I said, "Well, look, I didn't do anything wrong. If I'm not supposed to have it, that's okay. Take it. I don't want it. Take it." I said, "It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, we got to get out of here." And they wouldn't let us go. We didn't get out till 4 o'clock in the morning. In the meantime, my daughter is waiting outside in passenger service. She keeps asking everybody, "What are they doing with my mother?" She's been here for 2 hours, and she's not out there yet. And so finally, the Department of Agricultural saw that I really didn't do anything wrong. I didn't know what the rules were. And they let us go. But I'll tell you, I was there for 2 hours. So it just shows you how they can take you and capture you.
Yeah. I got a question to ask Eston Fuller. Eston, you still with us tonight?
Yeah, I'm still here.
You operated the simulators a lot. You instructed on the simulators a lot, didn't you?
Yeah, for about 9 years on the A300 and the DC-10.
Well, you took trips also on those simulator instructional flights. You'd go from Atlanta to Los Angeles or San Francisco or wherever, right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. Did anyone ever bring back anything?
You mean with the simulator?
Yeah. I just had to ask you that question.
When the veteran was given a check ride, they brought back a headache.
Yeah.
That's probably true. That was pretty easy. Hey, I just thought of something else I forgot to mention. I used to lay over in Boston, 727 trip, and there was one guy up there, taxi driver. His name was Antonio Siciliano, and he met the Eastern crew, and he would take you to the hotel. He'd pick you up the next day, and we were on the way back to the airport. I said, "Hey, Tony, do you know where I can get some lobster at?" He said, "Yeah," and he wheeled off on a side street, and I took some lobster home. They packed them in a cardboard box and put some ice in there with them, and I put them in the cockpit, got home with them, and my kids were pretty small then. They were still ages about 5 to 12, something like that. So we got a big pan of water on the stove and got it hot. I took those lobsters out and threw them in the hot water, and none of my four kids will look at a lobster or eat lobster now because they heard them things squealing when I threw them in that hot water.
That was a game changer.
Yeah, I brought my share of lobster home from Boston, too.
Jim just reminded me of a story. DC-9 trip, I was leaving Mobile one day, and I'm looking at the passengers boarding, and here comes a real well-dressed lady, and she's got two little poodle dogs, and she's carrying them. And she'd been to some poodle show in Mobile. Well, the agent there wanted to put them in a box and put them in the belly, and she was having a hard time over it. So I went out and told the agent, I said, "Hey, if you can find me some little box, I'll just let them ride in the jump seat back up to Atlanta." So we got them on the jump seat and took off, and co-pilot opened the door, and they got out. One of them got in my lap, and one of them got in the co-pilot's lap. We let them fly the airplane a little bit, you know. Anyway, about 2 weeks later, I get a letter from Borman, and he says, "Captain, I appreciate the PR. He says, I just got a nice letter from a lady, and she was part of the Rockefeller family. And
wow.
She really spoke highly of that. But he says, hey, I don't believe I'd do that again."
Not these days, you can't.
At least they didn't get hair all over your pants. Yes.
Jim, say again, Jim.
Did.
Yeah, the cat. You've done a story on the. You've written a story for the magazine about that cat, didn't you, Jim?
That Persian cat. Yeah, I thought I told it on this show a couple of years ago. Yeah, I think I told it. Is that just a Persian cat with the? What is that? Tobacco family lady.
Reynolds.
Reynolds. Right. She was part of that, but it was a Persian cat that just got hair all over me. But it had a fine time riding in my lap to Raleigh. The captain got the big letter, you know, on gold letterhead and everything else from the president of Eastern Airlines, and he let me read it. Anyhow.
Well, interesting, very interesting. Dorothy, I'm serious about putting all these Coors letters together and we send him the Coors beer. I think they do something with it.
Are you trying to make more work for me, Neil?
Yeah, there you go. Well, you got a new title, our Pulitzer prize right on the website. And you are good, Dorothy.
Yeah.
Wow, what a lot of fun tonight. This was a fun show. Hey, by the way, we've got the board full, so I've opened every microphone. So if you want to say something, now is the time to do it. We'd like to hear your story. Well, no takers. No takers.
I don't think so.
Well,
none
I
of
think,
the girls are here tonight? Colleen or Connie or Sharon?
Carlene didn't. No, she didn't. She advertised our program on her website, which she has a wonderful website out there in Seattle. And by the way, guys and gals, she emailed us that she had passed her check ride, and she is now rated on the Boeing 777.
All right.
So wonderful news.
Good for
wonderful news
good
for Carlene. And I told her, I said, I don't know how you do all the things that you do, that your mother, your grandmother, you're working on your PhD in aviation at Embry-Riddle, and you're flying, you're taking check rides on wonderful equipment. You've got the best job in the world on a Boeing. And a remarkable lady, plus the fact that she's written how many novels now, Dorothy? About six or seven?
She has at least seven that we know of. I think she was writing another one, too, but she's got she usually shows six whenever she does an email, but I think she actually has seven now.
Well, you know, she's the captain on the 777, and you and I can both remember when Eastern hired the first female pilot, Barbara.
Barbara.
Her name escapes me now.
Barbara. I can't remember her last name. Pilot, one of the very first female pilots of any airline.
Right. Yeah. I think Piedmont had the first woman. A long time ago. That was it. Barbara, what was her last name?
Barbara Barrett. That's right. That was her maiden name.
Maiden name.
Really wonderful stories tonight, guys, and really great, great show. I really enjoyed it. Anyone else have anything else before we turn it over back over to narrator
Jim.
Chuck. Chuck, you got some phase out things, or we've had our discussion here okay, Dorothy, do you have an announcement to make about the website and or future shows?
Yes, just to remind everybody, we have 986 members now, and we're still going, trying to meet our goal of 1,000. So please keep remembering to have your friends and friends of Eastern people to join us. Encourage them to join our membership. It doesn't cost anything to join us. All you have to do is go online and register on the front page. It's not a big deal, but would love to have you. Just want a reminder also of the REPA convention that's in Charleston, South Carolina. Keep it posted on your calendar. It's the 48th annual REPA convention at the Francis Marion Hotel, and that's going to be from September 4th to September 7th. Silver Liners, too, are having a convention at the Wyndham Grand in Jupiter, Florida at Harborside, and theirs is May 15th, May 18th. Now, the EAL radio show is going to be at both events, and so we'll be sure to have a broadcast coming from there a couple of days at Reaper and one of the days at Silver Liners. We'll have more information on the website. Also, don't forget that we have the upcoming Eastern BRAT program, and that's scheduled for April 16th. So we'd like all of you out there to remind your children, grandchildren, friends that would love to have them on the show. Go ahead.
Airways.
That's Neil.
I hit the wrong button. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's Hop.
No,
let's hop.
So anyway,
I thought you were through.
That's okay. I just want to remind everybody to send their emails to host@ealradioshow.com. Put your name and telephone on there so we'll know who is calling in and how to place you on our Rolodex when we're trying to call out to you to say what you need to say for Eastern Brat program. That's it. Back to you, Neil.
Okay. It is
presenting Hop Harrigan, America's Ace of the Airways.
CX4 calling control tower. CX4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Okay. This is Hop Harrigan. Coming in. Yes, it's America's Ace of the Airways.
You know, last week we had a wonderful From the Eastern Files. We did a program, which we'll probably do the next couple of series, of legendary Eastern Airlines pilots. And the first one we started off with last week, last Thursday. You can catch it on the archive because it's there. You can listen to Captain Slim Babbitt, a remarkable man. He was just an epitome of an airline captain, and he was a negotiator for ALPA, the Airline Pilots Association, not only for the Eastern Airlines, but for the National Association. And they would call in Slim for any negotiations that required the talents of Slim. Slim Babbitt, and of course his son Randy Babbitt, a captain also with Eastern Airlines, became the head of the FAA. He was the FAA administrator for 8 years, and we'd sure like to see if we can get him on a radio show one of these days to interview Randy. But it was a wonderful story about Slim Babbitt, and this. Thursday, our show, of course, we switch back and forth, will be Hop Harrigan, a wonderful series. It's a lot of fun to do. Don is the narrator and the host of that show, Don Gagnon. You've heard him tonight. And we'll be doing one this Thursday. So make sure you tune in for Hop Harrigan, Ace of the Airways.
Also on the Blog Talk Radio, so if you missed any of them, be sure to go and listen to them on www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. I listened last week after I wasn't home for Dawn to listen to it, but honestly, it was a riot. I loved it. Great job, Neil and Dawn.
We had a good time.
Excellent.
Yeah, we sure did. We sure did. It's a lot of fun. And once we run out of the series of the Hop Harrigan, we'll be doing other airline and aviation broadcasts, radio broadcasts dating back in the 40s and early 50s. So it's a lot of fun to do that and a lot of fun to listen to, I think. At least it is for me, because when I was a child, laying there with my head in my hands, listening to every sound that came across that radio. And because there was no television back in those days. And it was a lot of fun doing that. Now, I'm going to turn it over to Jim Hart. But before that, we're going to land the airplane. So, Jim, here's our landing. Let's see what kind of three-point landing or two-point landing or whatever we got. This airline landing.
Landing, Captain Midnight. Be sure to tune in again next Monday at 7 p.m. when Eastern Flight 356 will be taxiing from the gate with another adventure. This time the topic, how to get from point A to point B in an airplane. But please be sure to be with us. That's our show for tonight, folks. And Hop Harrigan, we wish you a safe, speedy trip. And we thank all participating in tonight's broadcast. With this, we take a line from Stories from Lake Wobegon, where all the eastern women are unequaled, all the eastern men are good-looking, and all the eastern children and eastern grandchildren are way above average. Until then, we'll say a good night, Eastern family. We love you, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern.
We love you, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern. Love you.
Good night.
Great show.
Great show.